Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program back in Louisville, Kentucky. It's a stormy, wintry day here. I don't know what it's like where you are, but I woke up this morning with my wife on the East Coast. We were on Cape Cod, and the very break of dawn, long before dawn, I actually left Cape Cod and been on the air most of the day and got back here. And it's just a reminder to me, as we were looking around the airport on the Monday of Thanksgiving week, how many people are in transit right now. The airport was filled with families with little kids. We saw all these babies and toddlers and others being taken. Evidently, it's time to go to grandmother's house. So that looks like what's going on. And it's a great time for families to get together. I hope that you will be together with at least some of your family this coming Thanksgiving. This is always a challenging week for radio. I'll just tell you right up front. It's a challenging week because when you have a major holiday like this, you have people that are outside their normal schedules. You've got people moving here and there and everywhere, and the big issues tend to usually slow down just because everybody's thinking in terms of the looming holiday. That's what makes today's newspapers kind of interesting, because in today's newspapers, there is not so much the slowing down. Now, let me tell you, a part of that has to be this economic crisis. And so today you've got all this news about the Obama economic team being put together. You've got big news about cabinet selections being put together. You've got news and rumors of a $700 billion buyout for major industrials, including the big three automakers in the plans of the Obama administration that is now forming. You've got all kinds of things like that are now in the news. What caught my attention this morning, though, is something else. And we've been giving a lot of attention necessarily to the issue of same-sex marriage on this program, especially Proposition 8 in California. And we've been talking on this program from time to time about what it would look like if indeed same-sex marriage became legalized, what it would look like in this one respect. But we've considered several different dimensions, but follow with me just a moment what it would look like if your church did not recognize same-sex unions, or if you in another sphere of life did not recognize same-sex unions. The legalization of same-sex unions is going to change everything. And I want to tell you there's good evidence for that today, coming out of California, where it didn't pass, which is to say same-sex marriage was not sustained by the people of California. When they passed Proposition 8 on November the 4th, they defined marriage as the union of a man and a woman. They reversed the action of their own Supreme Court back in May. And what we have now is news coming out of the Los Angeles Times that liberal Hollywood, that's exactly the way, by the way, the Times has identified this force, liberal Hollywood is trying to decide how it deals with the passage of Proposition 8 and the defeat of same-sex marriage. And if you look at this news story, and you can find an article about it at my website at albertmohler.com, it says that they're taking names. They're ransacking the contribution lists of those who gave to the pro-Proposition 8 forces, and they're calling for people to be fired. Now, if you look at the news story from the Los Angeles Times published today, it tells us that at least some people have been forced out of their jobs already because they had publicly taken a stand against same-sex marriage. There is enormous outrage that is being expressed against the Mormon Church. You've had protests, demonstrations, near riots outside some Mormon sites. You've got calls for boycotts of this and boycotts of that. Today's Los Angeles Times story says that Hollywood is trying to figure out how to handle the fact that some people in the entertainment business, now imagine that, in the entertainment business were willing to put themselves on the line for Proposition 8, which means against same-sex marriage. And so they're calling for everything from boycotts to people getting fired and all the rest. There have been protests outside evangelical churches as well as Mormon institutional sites. There have been interesting responses. The issue, it really for me today, comes down to this. Here's Thanksgiving week. This is a week in which we're thinking about family, marriage. We're thinking about all the things for which we are thankful. We are thinking about gathering and traveling and all those other things. But there are other people thinking different thoughts. There are people thinking how to penalize those who supported marriage and who oppose same-sex marriage. They're calling for people's jobs. They're protesting outside of offices and churches and Mormon temples. You know, here's the question for me today, and I want to open the question not only for me, but for you. How long do you think your church will hold out? I mean, what we're going to face here is an enormous wave of public opposition coming from those who are the cultural creatives in this society, those who shape the media, those who write the television scripts and all the rest. Let me tell you, this is how it works. It works by shaming. That's what they're going to attempt to do. They're going to attempt to shame people into submission to the agenda of same-sex marriage. And this passage of Proposition 8 in California has been an enormous jolt, a shock to people who thought that history was on their side. They are still convinced that they're right, and they are still going to push the same-sex marriage agenda. They're going to be pushing it every way they know how. And they have enormous leverage. They have Hollywood and so much of the media. They have the mainstream news media. They have the higher educational institutions, by and large. They have enormous clout. And they are now saying they intend to use that clout. The Los Angeles Times this morning is very, very clear on this. You have people in Hollywood saying, we didn't do what we should have done. Now we're going to use our clout to see that Proposition 8 is reversed. Now, what happens when it's not just a Mormon temple on Santa Monica Boulevard in Los Angeles? What happens when it's not just an evangelical church in Orange County? What happens when it's your church? Do you think your church would hold out very long? What about Christian institutions? You know, the big deal is here, they want to raise the cost. Those who are pushing the same-sex marriage agenda want to raise the cost of opposing them, disagreeing with same-sex marriage, and certainly taking a public stand. They want to scandalize the opposition. This is the Monday of Thanksgiving week, and I have to tell you, this is not one of those things I think most people would list as a matter of thankfulness. It is, however, a challenge that is addressed to us. We're going to talk about it today. To join the conversation, give me a call at 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. We have to be intelligent in thinking and talking about this. Being intelligent means that we do not speculate. We operate just on the basis of the evidence that's put before us. And here's the evidence. You now have three articles today, two in the Washington Post, one in the Los Angeles Times, that really indicate the very same thing. In the Washington Post, a gay rights activist writes to say, no more Mr. Nice Guy. He said he is just now going to go after people who disagree with same-sex marriage because, in his view, they simply need to be marginalized, isolated, and scandalized. And that's the way it's going to go. These are the tactics that are being used. Join the conversation by calling me at 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. More about that in just a moment. Much of America right now is talking about another matter of great sadness. It's something that certainly has our attention. It's salacious and scandalous. It's almost hard to believe. And yet it's the kind of shocking development that, when we think about it, tells us a great deal about humanity. Abraham Biggs broadcast the last moments of his life and committed suicide on the internet. He did so last Wednesday. He talked of suicide, took pills, and according to USA Today, lay down to die. Some viewers on the internet, see, that's the big issue here. He did it with a webcam watching him. Some people on the internet egged him on to commit suicide. Others discussed whether it was real. It turned out that he had done something like this in the past when he wasn't serious. But this is now a young man who died committing suicide at age 19 while people were watching on the internet. There are many people now wondering if this is going to lead to copycats. It's a very difficult situation. The father of young Abraham Biggs has spoken to the media, suggesting that so far as he is concerned, those who were watching, as well as those who were sponsoring the website and all the rest, are at least partly to blame for his son's death. Quote, as a human being, you don't watch someone in trouble. Just sit back and watch. According to USA Today, some viewers did contact the website to notify police, but the police did not arrive on time. Now, when I look at this, here's what comes to my mind. Number one, we're looking at a young man who almost classically defines suicide for us. You see, people tend to think of suicide just as a way of ending a life, but that's not all that is ever involved. In almost any case, if you're a pastor or someone close to suicide, you know it's never that simple. It is about messaging. And that is a part of the greatest pain about suicide. Those who experience the aftermath of suicide, the suicide of a friend or a loved one, know it was about messaging. A message was being sent. And there is no messaging like trying to do this with a worldwide audience on the World Wide Web. This was obviously a deeply troubled young man. This is a tragedy any way you look at it. But the messaging here is a bit bigger than one man's suicide on the World Wide Web. It's a messaging about a voyeuristic society that on the internet is allowing itself to view things, to consider things, to imagine things that it would never allow in public. And that's just another warning about the power of the internet. And folks, it's just another warning to parents about what happens when you give your kids unrestricted access to the internet. It's not just pornography. It's not just the kind of chat rooms and all the rest. It's also, literally, sometimes, a matter of life and death. That's at least part of the message we all need to hear here. Back to talk about what's going on in the aftermath of Proposition 8 and why it matters for you, your church, perhaps your seminary, your university, your Christian college. We'll be right back.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mohler Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. You know, the effort here is pretty clear, and the strategy. It goes all the way back to the decision, and it was a brilliant decision, the decision to make the gay rights movement a parallel movement to the civil rights movement. Those who were seeking to push the normalization of homosexuality, say 40 years ago, in 1968, they had an insurmountable challenge. There seemed to be no way for them to succeed. But before them, in the late 1960s, was an effort that appeared to be succeeding, and that was the civil rights movement. And they said, let's just create our movement in the image of the civil rights movement. Now, by the way, that is not an inference that I have drawn. That's the recitation of the history. You look at the major published histories of the gay rights movement, they will tell you that's just what we did. And again, I'll say hats off to them. That was a brilliant move. Because what happened in the civil rights movement was not just the legitimate voicing of concerns that led to a protest, that led to laws and vast cultural changes that were absolutely necessary. It led to a change in the mind of America. And I think the election of Barack Obama as president of the United States is at least one very graphic, tangible proof that a great deal of that change has indeed taken place. What is that change? It is a change from believing that race was such an important issue that it would be legitimate to discriminate against persons on the basis of their skin color. That's, you know, 50 years ago in America. To the point at which now, it is a humiliating recognition for Americans that such discrimination ever happened. And we are rightly humiliated. Bob Jones University, just in recent days, has published on its website an apology for its racial practices in the past. And even as I'm holding in my hand this news story in the Washington Times Associated Press release about Bob Jones University, Bob Jones University isn't alone here. There are plenty of churches, plenty of Christian institutions, plenty of denominations. I'm a part of one of them. And that's basically true all across the board, that needs to apologize, and probably again and again and again, for involvement in a pattern of systemic racial discrimination. The effort now on the part of same-sex marriage advocates and those who are advocating the normalization of homosexuality is to make sexual orientation the same thing as racial categories in such a way that it would become unthinkable in this society to believe that homosexual relations are in any way inferior, or in any way to be less recognized as normal and appropriate and fully legal than what you would have in terms of heterosexual relationships with the sanction of marriage. It's very, very interesting when you start looking at this, because you realize the gay rights movement has been stunningly successful. I think of a book by a couple of gay rights activists just several years ago in which they were arguing, the book was entitled After the Ball, and their argument was that eventually the public relations strategy that would win is the public relations strategy that makes the homosexual issue such a fixture in terms of American society that it would be unthinkable that anyone would think any negative thought. It would become politically an embarrassment, politically an impossibility to say anything publicly against homosexuality or the normalization of homosexual behaviors and relationships. Now, the story that I really took as my interest this morning, that was the basis of my article published on my website at albertmohler.com, a sign of things to come. This is a Los Angeles Times piece. It is an eye-opening report into the response of Hollywood's cultural liberals to the passage of Proposition 8. So reporters Rachel Abramowitz and Tina Daunt opened their article with this question, quote, should there be boycotts, firings, blacklists, or de facto shunning of those who supported Proposition 8, end quote. Just think about that. Just for a moment. Here's the Los Angeles Times, one of the largest and most significant, most influential newspapers in the United States, publishing an article, the first sentence of which, please hear it again, is this. Should there be boycotts, blacklists, firings, or de facto shunning of those who supported Proposition 8? You see exactly what's going on here. Blacklists, it's rather culturally loaded, isn't it, for Hollywood to talk about a blacklist? I mean, after all, Hollywood took as its moment of greatest honor during the Cold War the fact that there was resistance to those who would blacklist actors. Now they are ready to blacklist those who supported Proposition 8. Boycotts and firings. Let me just read to you from the article. That's the issue consuming many in liberal Hollywood who fought to defeat the initiative banning same-sex marriage and are now reeling with recrimination and dismay. Meanwhile, activists continue to comb donor lists and employ the internet to expose those who donated money to support the ban. Let me just stop at that sentence for a moment. So what you have here are people that are going through all of the internet sites that were pro-Proposition 8 and going through all the donor lists, which are a matter of record because this was a political campaign, thus given electoral laws and regulations, the names have to be disclosed. So you have people going through there, and when they find the name of someone that they know, someone who's in a position of cultural influence, someone who is in a position of commercial influence, they're saying, look, there's a name, now we will punish that person. Now let me read to you again from the article. Next paragraph. Already out is Scott Eckern, director of the nonprofit California Musical Theater in Sacramento, who resigned after a flurry of complaints from prominent theater artists, including Hairspray composer Mark Shaman, when word of his contribution to the Yes on 8 campaign surfaced. Next paragraph. Other targets include Film Independent, the nonprofit arts organization that puts on both the Los Angeles Film Festival and the Spirit Awards, the Cinemark Theater chain, and the Sundance Film Festival. Now, all that comes down to the fact that a couple of individuals who were either leaders of or employees of those organizations gave to Proposition 8, it became known, and now some in Hollywood are saying, now we go after them. And by the way, this isn't paranoid conspiracy theory talk. This is the front page of the Los Angeles Times. We're going to go after them. That's what they're saying. Now, as these developments in California unfold, it's clear that where efforts to legalize same-sex marriage fail, proponents will hunt down opponents of gay marriage for sanction and opposition. It won't be just California. It's going to be Arizona, Florida, and elsewhere. Note carefully the fact that Hollywood insiders and gay rights activists are scrutinizing the list of those who contribute to Proposition 8 support, looking for individuals, organizations, and corporations to isolate and punish. Now, let me ask you a question. How long do you think your business would hold out? How long do you think your Christian school would hold out? How long do you think your church would hold out if you've got people camped out in front, if you've got people branding you as the equivalent of racists, if you've got people coming and saying you're just to be isolated and exposed and blacklisted, who would bring recriminations against you? I mean, this is a pretty expensive price to pay. And this is the price that is now paid by some when same-sex marriage failed. Just imagine what it would look like if same-sex marriage were legalized. And your Christian school says we won't recognize same-sex marriage. Now, someone's going to come along and say, well, you've got a constitutional right. Well, you have a constitutional right that will not provide you any cover or protection whatsoever against the kind of sanction these folks are bringing. You have no constitutional right not to be boycotted. You have no constitutional right not to be protested. You have no constitutional right not to have people accuse you of being a racist or the equivalent thereof because you refuse to recognize the absolute normalization and legitimacy of homosexual marriage on par with heterosexual marriage. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Folks, this is one of those issues that on a week like this kind of sneaks up on us. There are folks who have been awakened by the passage of Proposition 8 in California. They're ready to do something about it. Those who pressed for it and voted for it are far more likely to think the job is done and go home. And do what people do in raising families and getting back to work. The issue's not going to go away. The Los Angeles Times reminds us today that even if you're not going after this issue may soon be going after you. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. The phone number to join the discussion is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Very interesting email received from a listener who's listening and obviously listening carefully, and she makes a very interesting point. It's one with which I actually have a lot of sympathy in terms of my attitudinal disposition to it. She writes, "One thing that makes me upset about this whole Proposition 8 and homosexual push for marriage is that we Christians keep using the word marriage," she puts in quotes, "when we discuss it. We use terms like same-sex marriage. I truly believe we're helping the opposition by doing this. The very definition of marriage is one man, one woman, and a covenant relationship for life. Water is a combination of oxygen and hydrogen. It is not a combination of oxygen and anything else. If we combine oxygen with any other gas except hydrogen, it will most assuredly not be water. Let's use another term, perhaps pseudo-marriage." Well, that's been tried, and I appreciate very much the suggestion. The problem is that the state of California and these courts have made it the language, and so it's now unavoidable to use this language. And it's very interesting that what's going on here is that the language is the issue. And so, for instance, in some of our states, like California right now, do you realize that the issue in California is the word marriage? Because in California, you already have domestic partnerships that are recognized of virtually all of the rights of marriage. It's just the issue of the word, and that's why they are pressing. And let's just remember, from May until November the 4th, California had legalized same-sex marriage. It's what it said on the certificate. It's what the law recognized it to be, and that's what makes it very difficult. And that's why I don't see any way around using the word. In print, you can sometimes put some quotation marks around it, but when you're on the air and you're talking about it in conversation, it's just the word. I agree with this listener wholeheartedly that marriage, in terms of, for instance, its ontological reality, which is to say marriage as God established it, is the union of a man and a woman, period. But marriage as a term in our dictionary right now is up for debate. That's why we've got to really be in the struggle to make sure it's defined rightly, or otherwise it's going to be defined for us. The phone number to join the conversation is 877-893-8255. Always glad to hear from folks on the Internet. You can write us right now at mail@albertmohler.com. Go to albertmohler.com, hit the mail button. Let us know what you're thinking. Let's go to Tim, listening on XM170 from Chattanooga, Tennessee. Go ahead, Tim.
Thank you. I may lose my signal here, but I wanted to ask your opinion on something. If your employer, our employer is recently beginning to offer the same benefits to domestic partners, all in the name of recruiting diversity, other than disappointment, is there anything that we should express because of that?
You know, Tim, that is a very live issue for an awful lot of Christians. I've received at least three emails about that or a very similar issue related to this just in the last week. And the issue is pretty complex. Let me tell you why. For instance, right now, if you are a national firm and you are doing business in San Francisco, California, the price of having the legal right to do business in San Francisco, California is that you have to offer full benefits to same-sex couples the same as to heterosexual couples. And so if you're going to do business in San Francisco, at least it's my understanding, that was brought against airlines, for instance, that had landing rights at the San Francisco airport, you've got to do that. Or if you're a business in San Francisco. And so far as I know, and I asked about this just recently, there is no conscience clause on that, no religious exemption clause there within that jurisdiction. So at one level, Tim, there are some businesses that are in a position where, in order to do business, they're now being coerced into doing this. But then you have other businesses that have decided to do it in order to make some statement about political correctness, who've decided to say, and I'll tell you how you know that's what's going on. It's when they start placing advertisements in the media in which they brag about it. That tells you it's a public relations strategy, because they obviously see it as in their interest to be seen as a company that offers this kind of benefit. You know, the issue here, Tim, and it's a chicken and egg issue in some ways. Which comes first, the chicken or the egg? What comes first, the cultural impetus or the decision of the corporation? It's sometimes hard to tell. But here's the lamentable thing. Already, even though same-sex marriage right now is legal in only two states in the United States of America, And even as domestic partnerships or civil unions that are the near equivalent of marriage are still recognized in a minority of states in the United States of America, certainly covering a minority of the American population, the reality is that culturally they've already been successful in shifting the discussion a significant degree such that corporations are feeling the pressure to do this. But when you start to redefine marriage and you start to give other relationships the same benefits as marriage, you are basically subverting marriage. And you're suggesting that marriage as a heterosexual union for procreation, the raising of children, really isn't all that important. Or at least it's no important than other conceivable relationships as well. As to what you do in your company, I don't know that I can say because I don't know the circumstances of your company. But I can tell you this, it's always right to say the right thing at the right time. We'll be right back.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mohler Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. I think Tim's call helps to crystallize something in my mind, and I'll just say exactly what I'm thinking here. I'm thinking that over the next several months, I think you're going to see an awful lot of Christian churches, Christian schools, Christian organizations asking some very hard questions. And I think in one sense that big question is going to be this. Where do we draw the line? Where exactly do we decide that we reach the absolute limits of conscience? Let me give you an example. Right now, let's bring up one of the issues that is used by those who are pushing same-sex unions and what they will call same-sex marriage. Let's look at one of the arguments. One of the arguments is it is unfair. And it is indeed mean-spirited to keep persons from having visitation rights in the hospital and to keep persons from being able to designate a same-sex partner as the deciding person when it comes to medical decisions. Now, I'll tell you right now, I am willing to completely let that issue go. I do not see that as an issue where my conscience requires that I oppose a change in the policy. I see no reason why an adult should not be able to designate any other adult as one who is capable of visiting him or her in the hospital, even in the most extreme of situations. And I see no reason why any single human being should not be able to designate any other human being in a legal and official way as the one to be the deciding partner in the sense of a medical decision or a medical emergency. And so I don't see that as compromising marriage, if that makes any sense. But when it comes to adoption, I see a very different picture. Because when it comes to parenthood, I think that's a very, very different picture. I think we instantly enter a different arena. Now, I'm not suggesting that the Christian church has ever had the opportunity or taken the opportunity or, for that matter, taken the discipline and challenge to sit down and say, all right, let's try to figure out exactly where the boundary of conscience is. I can go to a school. I was just on the campus of two major Ivy League universities this past week. And if you are on the campus of these Ivy League universities, you're going to see gay rights organizations with prominent meeting space. You're going to see posters. You're going to be seeing all kinds of things. And I could still enroll as a student in those universities without conflicting my conscience in terms of its boundary line, because I would not see my enrollment in that institution as being an absolute endorsement of all that the institution might allow. But, even when I say that, I've got to tell you that I think there could be circumstances in which that could be very different. I mean, I think there could be circumstances in which I could find out that what was going on in the science labs was so morally abhorrent that I could not be identified with the institution. This is tough stuff. And it's not just tough for individuals. It's tough for institutions. It's tough for Christians right now that are trying to run a business. And they're trying to do so and remain Christians while running the business. It's very, very difficult. Just imagine right now, if you are a young person considering running for political office, just think about that for a moment. Let's say that right now you're a 35-year-old real estate agent or insurance broker in a county seat town, and someone comes up to you and says, why don't you run for the city commission? And you say, you know, that could be a good exercise of civic responsibility. I've always been really interested in this community. Maybe I can give something to this community. And so you decide you're going to run. You file for office. The next thing you know, the local newspaper comes up, and there's a reporter with a microphone stuck in your face. What do you think about the issue of same-sex marriage? You instantly speak to that issue just in terms of your own response, and you say that you do not believe that same-sex marriage is marriage. You believe that marriage is the union of a man and a woman. Then you're on the front page of the paper as someone who opposes same-sex marriage. And then all of a sudden your wife and kids run into people in the community. You come up and say, I saw what your husband and father said, and I disagree with that. And before long, you've got people who are criticizing you for holding that position. And then there are organizations that are going to give money to your opponent in this race precisely because he or she takes the opposite position. And the next thing you know, you who were very happy in your business with your family just weeks before, you are now involved in a deeply controversial world that you didn't even see coming. Let's say you're a student in one of the most prestigious universities in this country. You gained admission. You are now an undergraduate or a graduate student in one of America's premier universities. And one of the things you do during orientation week is that you are presented with the basically defined worldview expectations of the institution. And among those worldview expectations is a list of things you can and cannot say. And as you begin your experience on this campus, you all of a sudden understand that even off that list of things you can and can't say with politically correct speech or what's designated against hate speech or et cetera, or what's considered, I saw this the other day, lifestyle demeaning language, which is anything that could be critical of anyone else's lifestyle. Then you go, and your first day in the classroom, your first day in the graduate seminar, you all of a sudden discover that even things that aren't on that list just aren't possible. And it's not just, I had a student tell me not too long ago who had graduated, and he was thankfully did graduate from one of these schools, and it happened to be one of the schools in the Northeast, but this could just as easily happen just about anywhere else. It could be, you know, Madison, Wisconsin. It doesn't have to be Berkeley, California. It could be Austin, Texas, where things like this are going on. And this student said to me that when he got to the end of his senior year, he had to write a thesis. He wrote his thesis, and he turned it in. And he said that there was one professor who was not on his committee that came up and said, I would have flunked you. I would have failed you. And the student said, why? And he said, because I know that you're a member of the Young Republicans. And that's incompatible with the values of this department. Now, this student, there's no lawsuit here because he did get the degree. This person was not on his committee. But it's just one of the kinds of things that is stated, and it's because that particular organization had taken a stand against same-sex marriage, and that was the issue. It wasn't economic theory. It wasn't foreign policy that was the issue. It was same-sex marriage. We're right back where it started. Folks, this is a difficult day, and as we're headed into Thanksgiving week, an awful lot of people are going to be thinking about different things the rest of this week, and that's probably very healthy. But the real world intrudes upon us. It certainly did this morning when I picked up the newspaper and was just looking at articles across the internet, and I saw that piece in the Los Angeles Times this morning, and I said, okay, here is the shape of things to come. We've seen it coming. Now you got Hollywood saying, we're going to blacklist. We're going to seek to get people fired. We're going to go through the contribution lists, and we're going to humiliate people. We'll try to get their jobs taken away. As one person said, we'll just try to ruin them. And it's a strategy that just might work. Back of final thoughts. This is the Albert Mueller Program. Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. Thanks to you for listening and joining the discussion today. This is an issue we're going to continue to track, and we're not going to talk about it every day, but, you know, with this flurry of news activity, it's rather hard not to talk about it, especially when you see a twist in the story like what happened this morning. We'll be tracking this, and I'm sure it will be back. But in the meantime, let me ask you this. Let me ask you to think about it. Let me just challenge you to give it some serious and sustained thought. Think about how you would answer the question, where's the boundary line? Where does my conscience reach its absolute boundary where I cannot do that and remain a faithful Christian? What can I accept and not accept? What can I do? What can I not do? Where can I go? Where would I not go? Because on these issues, It's going to be very, very difficult. That's why we need the mind of Christ within the body of Christ, within the church, to figure a lot of this out. I don't think individually we're up to this. And you know, when I start thinking about the question that was asked by Tim and by others, you know, if I were a businessman in this situation, I don't think I'd try to figure this out just with myself, my partners, and my attorney. I think I'd want to go to the church, to the elders of the church, and say, look, you know, what's our wisdom in this? What would the Scripture say to me? Where am I bound and where am I loosed by Scripture? And I think far too much of what's going on in the church is people are just doing this ad hoc, just by intuitionism, just deciding, this feels right to me, I think I can do this, I could go this far. And the problem with that kind of logic is, it's always a moving target. I mean, once you begin to say, I can live with this week, you'll live with something else the following week. I think when we really look at these issues, we come to the limits of what we can probably figure out on our own. And that's where we need help. And the Christian church is where we should go as Christians for help. We should go to our local congregation and say, we're trying to figure this out. And the fact that we don't have more couples going to the church saying, we need help with our marriage. The fact that we don't have more parents saying to people in the church, we need some help raising our kids. We faced some issues that we didn't really plan on. We don't know how to handle this. This is a tough one for us. Let's figure this out. The fact that we don't have more scientists and medical doctors showing up at church and saying to their Christian friends and brothers and sisters in Christ, I'm trying to figure this out. Do I do this or do I not do this? What's the right thing to do here? It's a symptom of the fact that the entire ethos of individualism has been so imbibed by the church that we think of ourselves as individuals who happen to show up in the same place to sing the same songs on Sunday, rather than as a part of the body of Christ. So if nothing else today, let's just remember that when we think about this and think we ought, think we must, we're not equipped to think about this alone. Thanks for joining the conversation with me today. We'll continue this. Send me your thoughts by email. Let me know what you're thinking. Meanwhile, today's the last day of SRN Networks. That's the Salem Radio Network's partnership with Feed the Children for Thanksgiving. It's a grand thing that will enable you to make a difference in the lives of some children and family. You can participate by going to 888-58-CHILD. That's phone number 888-58-CHILD, or donating online at www.feedthechildren.org/SRN. Thanks for listening today. I'll meet you tomorrow for Intelligent Christian Conversation, coast to coast and with listeners around the world. You've been listening to the Albert Mueller Program.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmoeller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmoeller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mueller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.